the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast on the CBP Media Network. This is number 77, Len. My name is Joey, and what's going on over there? Good to see you. You're looking well. This is the time of year. I don't know if you ever look back at our old episodes to cringe at how we used to do business, but this is around the time when both our tans start to fade, and it looks like maybe this week we're both a little lighter tone than we were 3 weeks ago. Anyway, how's it going over there? What's going on?
It's going okay. I don't think my tan's going to disappear. I'm still on Friday, still going to do my my 18 or 36 holes, so I'll be able to get some sun still in those days. And I'm still on the tennis courts every so often, so I'll be okay in that regards. But what's going on over here, Joey? Splatoon 3 came out, and I'm enjoying that. I love the game. It's a fantastic game. It's the third rendition. I got them all, and I enjoy it thoroughly. So how are things over there with you?
They're good, man. I was thinking about you the other day. I saw a couple of Splatoon 3 reviews on YouTube that I haven't checked out yet. But as always, these games are calling my name. I've been looking at a few because when winter comes, you need something that's like, you know, going to drag you through the doldrums, right? It's darker earlier. There's no sports, no stuff like that. And I know for sure I'm going to pick up God of War in November, which is going to be great. I still want to get back into Age of Empires, which I will do at some point, maybe this weekend I'm away, but maybe next weekend, I don't know. And also, Len, like, where's the Horizon Forbidden West DLC?
What game is that, Forbidden West?
Forget it. Let's just get to the show. Let's get to the show content. We got a lot.
No, what console? I'm curious.
It's a PS5 exclusive. Horizon's the best, man. Yeah, Zero Dawn came out a few years ago. Yeah. So anyway,
I haven't touched that PS5 too much, very much.
Well, you better start. Listen, we got lots to talk about tonight. We got interesting Canadian news, big Canadian news that we will get to later in the show. We got a green candle that is bulging, throbbing, pulsating, blown through the roof. And we're going to talk about all this stuff. But first, Len, two sponsors we always got to talk about. One, ShakePay, best place for Canadians to buy and never sell Bitcoin in Canada. A couple things going on there, Len. Apart from the $30 on your first $100 buy if you use our promo code to sign up, CBP. You also get shaking sats. Shake your phone every day, get a few Satoshis, up to 1,000 after a year. Not bad. Second, shake squads. You and four friends or four people you don't know buy something. Each of you get 42 sats per day per purchase. Can't beat that. They got shake paid. They might comp you a purchase off your CAD balance in Satoshis. It's amazing. They got the sats back card. Same CAD balance, you spend on it, 2% on your first 5,000 spent, 1% in perpetuity after that. And now they got shake save, shake interest, shake something, where they pay
shake
you for your...
Too.
I got shake squads, okay. Yeah. Shake save, or something like that. I don't know what it's called. Whatever, it doesn't matter. They pay you for your CAD balance. So if you can stomach
shake
holding...
Earn, isn't it?
Shake pay earn. If you can stomach holding CAD in your account, you definitely are deserving of a reward. I personally don't keep that much CAD in my account because I don't put money there to hold in CAD. But anyway, if you do keep CAD in your account, you'll get paid out in Bitcoin, I guess every week or every month or something like that. I don't know exactly the details. It's still in open beta. And there's a points list and a wait list and all that, just like there was for the Satsback card, if you recall, many moons ago. So anyway, great. It's a great app. We like it. We use it. I think you guys should give it a shot if you haven't already. CBP is the promo code. Definitely tell your friends, tell your family, tell your mechanic. And not a better way to get started with Bitcoin. Inside of 10 minutes, you can get started on that app. Can't beat it. Anyway, Len, what else we got?
Well, Ledin is our second sponsor. So it's a great way to earn some interest on the Bitcoin that you already bought. So open up an account with our referral code below. And if you fund your Ledin account with 150,000 sats, or 75 USDC, and keep it on the Ledin platform for 15 consecutive days, Ledin is going to gift you with 10 USDC, and it's going to be added to your Ledin account, no questions asked. Also, if you have a lot of Bitcoin, but you have some bills to pay, you don't want to sell your Bitcoin, because who does? Because we know it's going to be going up and up. Well, you could borrow against your Bitcoin with Ledin's loan options. So you basically put your Bitcoin on there. You use it as a collateral, 50% loan to value. You're good to go. They give you some money. You could go ahead and pay your very expensive bills without selling your Bitcoin. Also, if you do believe the price of Bitcoin is going up, which it did this past weekend, my block clock just changed. Well, you could use Ledin's B2X option. You could double up your Bitcoin stack, and by doing so and timing the market right, and then pulling it once the market does give you a little bit of a push, well, you now have more Bitcoin on your stack simply by timing the market and using the B2X option. And they also have the Bitcoin-backed mortgages. The price of homes are coming down, so if you have some Bitcoin on your reserves, you might as well use that as a way to get a new home, because you could get the Bitcoin-backed mortgages. This is industry first, from what I understand.
Don't live in the pod. Get the Bitcoin mortgage.
Get it. Get a new home. But it's not available everywhere, though. So if you are living somewhere where this is not being offered by Ledin, unfortunately, you're shut out. But also check their website to see where they're offering that, but also see what the interest rates for these savings and borrowing, because they change month to month, although they haven't changed in the past 3 months from what I recall correctly. So yeah, that's it for Ledin. I'm not sure if there's any other housekeeping items you want to slap off here before we get moving.
For sure there was. About an hour ago, I was thinking of these while I was doing my note organization. We were texting back and forth, and now I forget, Len. So whatever. The price of Bitcoin in American dollars is, drum roll please, $22,372.75. What about in Canadian?
$29,031. So that's, you know, it's a bit of a pump this past weekend. What happened? I do not know, nor do I care. As long as the price goes up, I get happy. Also, check out Fountain too. We're available on Fountain. If you're listening to this anywhere else, I recommend just listening to us on Fountain. It's a good way to help support an endeavor that is built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners, and you could earn some sats in the process for listening to some podcasts. So why not listen to us on that platform? So yeah. With that being said, Joey, you just want to rip right at it, because there's a heck of a lot of talk.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about. My wife just told me she wants to go for McFlurries after we're done. So let's get to it.
You want to do it in the daylight hours, unfortunately. It's not possible. Well, I'm not sure. I mean, let's lead things off again with our weekly economic update. And before we even go into it, Joey, I'm not sure if you saw, but the U.S. Army recommends food stamps for soldiers struggling with inflation. Did you happen to see that?
I didn't. Sounds like another big dub, though. Chalk that up. Put that photo right next to the baby formula on the aircraft carrier there, whatever that picture was. Big wins all over the place for the U.S.
Well, it's pretty shitty all around. And speaking of that, another one I wanted to ask you, the strategic reserves for the U.S. petroleum. Well, it reached an all-time low. It's down to 450 million barrels. This is the lowest since 1984, 24% down for this year. And we still have 4 months to go. So it is, we could hit a real, real low here where it could be down a third of the overall inventory they had. I mean, what are your thoughts about this?
I'll give you a bit of color. Anas Alhaji, the good Dr. Anas, who's come to some Twitter notoriety, to say the least, in the last 6 months for his expertise on energy. He figures that the price the U.S. will replenish the reserves at is somewhere between $52 and $54 U.S. a barrel. Do you picture it getting there? No shit. It ain't ever going to get there. And so the strategic political reserve is going to continue to be depleted by Brandon and friends, probably up until the midterms, which I think is their official position at the moment. I don't know, Len. Like, I just think I look at the price of oil. It climbed again today. So I think it's sitting above 88 or something like that now, maybe a little higher than that even. I should check it out. But I'm looking at the price of oil. I'm thinking about the things that are reopening all over the world. Yeah, it's $88.40 right now. So the price of oil still sitting around that 85, 90 range. OPEC, you know, reducing its production levels. They changed the language in their statements, their releases. From
it's in Arabic now.
From quota to target, right? When they talk about production. So I don't know what all these things put together, and an election coming in the States, and pretty clearly some weakness in terms of U.S. hegemony. I hope we talk a bit today about Ukraine and the shifting narrative there, because I have some extremely hot takes. I hope you got your oven mitts, because you're going to need them for these takes. But all this to say that the SPR is like, it is a symptom of a much larger problem in America, and specifically, I think, with their foreign policy and energy policy. Anyway, continue, my friend.
Well, home prices then is the next topic. They've declined 0.77% from the month of June to July. People might say, like, this is not a huge number. It's less than 1%. But when you're dealing with stuff in the hundreds of thousands, if not in millions, around or 0.75%, it's pretty big. And this is the first monthly fall in 3 years. And this is the largest single monthly decline since January 2011. We talk about homes all the time. It's the second worst performing July ever. And this is, you know, it's just the worst was in July 2010, and that was during the Great Recession. And is it going to get better? Nah, I don't think so, because mortgage rates, we hear this all the time, it's going to go up. In fact, right now it's sitting at 5.9%, which is pretty darn high, the highest since 2008. But even that is going to seem like a bargain in a not too distant future, if you believe Jerome Powell and what he's saying. He vows to continually raise rates until the job is done to rein in rising costs. And if you read between the lines, the economy is going to suffer as a result. And
it's not even between the lines anymore, Len. It's right out in the open. Pain, pain, pain. You never stop.
You're going to feel it. And companies that have been used to doing business in a low inflation, low interest rate environment, they're going to have to adjust, as both the high, you know, both numbers are now high. And if you believe Powell's words are to be believed, well, then businesses are going to have to find a new way to cope with rising rates and higher prices and everything else. And without getting into specifics, there's going to be a negative feedback loop that could spiral out of control and leave the economy in ruins. And so, you know, if they do fuck up the economy, which they already did, and they'll probably do it even going forward, not only did they fuck it up, but they probably want to do the same to the rest of the world. The U.S. is warning that they want to impose sanctions for buyers that ignore price cap on Russian oil. So if you want to buy some Russian oil, be ready to feel the wrath of the United States and their sanctions. In fact, the plaque on the Statue of Liberty talks about huddled masses, but they're referring to, now I understand it, gathering close together, getting close together to stay warm during the cold winter months. That's what I believe what they were talking about, huddled masses. Janet Yellen, man, she was on point this past week. She was just on fire. Well, she was talking about how she believes the U.S. economy will be able to engineer a soft landing. Fuck, I can't believe this. She will be correct. I'll say this. She will be correct if they do redefine what is a soft landing, similar to what they did with words like recession. So, yeah. So this could be something that could actually happen. But, of course, I don't think that's a reality. The ship has fucking sailed at this point. And from the same folks who said there would be no inflation, it's going to be transitory, it's good for us, now they're throwing in one new word, Joey. Luck. Did you hear this one?
I love that word.
So Janet Yellen,
when I think about economic forecasting, Len, the first word that comes to mind is luck.
Luck, I love it. So this is a quote from her. I'm not fudging this. The Fed is going to need skill and luck to bring down inflation while maintaining labor market strength. When luck is now being used to try to get out of this mess, we might as well start doing the 125x trades on Binance. A couple of good and very timely moves, that $30 trillion debt could be easily wiped off. Or maybe we could fucking stake some money on ETH. And then, you know, when creditors come calling, we can just say, unfortunately, it's locked up. We can't get access to it. There's no coding to get it. Then maybe that's a way to get out of it. We have to be creative in these very difficult times. And here at the CBP, we provide creative solutions.
Are you on the ballot? We got to get you on the ballot over there. Well,
No, I've never heard yet. No, I will never run. But something to consider here is that she's very persistent in her praise of the White House effort during the past 1.5 to 2 years. She mentioned this past week that policies enacted has made the economy stronger now than it was before March 2020. You heard it here, folks. Two successive declining quarters in GDP is now considered a success. Fuck, the money printer has got to go nuts, but they also have to start printing participation awards. There's no fucking way you could say that we're fucking winning right now. Joey, it looks like you have something on to say.
I'm good. Listen, I got lots to say, but you're rolling downhill. I'd like for you to continue, because I think we're gonna have, it sounds like, a lot of the same subjects to discuss, but some different material, which is fantastic for the listeners and viewers.
So what I want to say, what's really fucked up here, there's still a desire to wean off ourselves from fossil fuels. And all the while, we're witnessing the Armageddon that's taking place in fucking Europe right before our very eyes. The unfortunate people that are living there, they're going to suffer this winter. And a snippet from Janet Yellen's quote, this from a speech this past Thursday: it will put us on a way forward towards a future where we depend on wind, sun, and clean sources for our energy. We will rid ourselves from our current dependency on fossil fuels and the whims of autocrats like Putin. These dependencies, they're self-inflicted. There was a point in time in the not too distant past that the U.S. was a net producer of oil. It's no longer the case. And how could there be a push for wind and solar and other clean energy sources it's really an unproven, reliable energy source. And we could look at California as the shining example here. They have ample sun. They have so much coastlands for wind generation. Yet we hear that people over there are going to have to deal with brownouts. Like, why? Well, they're weaning themselves off fossil fuels. And on top of this, Janet Yellen is saying that the demand for non-Russian oil will increase as the EU will need to find their oil elsewhere that isn't from Russia. So the US will likely see higher prices of gasoline this winter as there's going to be less supply of non-Russian oil floating around. And you're talking about the strategic reserves. The price to replenish it, $55 to $60 you're mentioning?
$52 to $54, yeah, according to Anas. Yeah.
We're never going to see it. So she's covered it all this past weekend, the whole spectrum. Soft landing is likely.
She's on the spectrum, all right.
We don't need fossil fuels. Now she's saying prices are going to rise for gas in the winter. But what isn't going to rise this winter is rent in Scotland. I'm not sure if you heard this one, but the Scottish government has put forth new packages that includes rent freezes and other goodies. Now, to summarize, a freeze on landlords' rent raises are going to be banned. And they're also going to be banning the eviction of tenants until at least March 2023. And this is a great way to pass on the blame. Fuck up the economy and have the landlord shoulder the weight of rising costs. It seems like it's such a fucking disaster. But there's even more creative ways to punish people as a result of stupid policy. We look at Switzerland, for example. They're looking to potentially imprison people if they warm their rooms past 19 Celsius. I'm not sure if you saw that.
Oh, I got something on that.
They're going to be issuing fines to people who heat their homes beyond that
amount. They got the Rat Your Neighbor signs up on bus shelters. Did you see this over there? No. In public transit shelters? Yeah. If you catch your neighbor heating their house too much or using too much energy, call this number. Call what number? They're trying to stay warm. What the fuck is going on over there, man?
Could you imagine looking through the window of your neighbor and you see him not wearing fucking gloves and a hat?
My God, that person.
Fuck that. So the fines, I did some research.
This guy's looking way too warm. Call the cops.
He's looking too happy. Fuck this. So it's going to be $40 per day fines, and the maximum is going to be $4,000. And if there's any scofflaws avoiding at this, they're going to be facing jail time, so or potential jail time. So ask yourself, is this a practice from a successful and thriving country? Well, if you think so, I got a bug sandwich for you, so fuck you. Switzerland, they seem to have flown under the radar this past little while. In fact, they have reported inflation just under 4%. So they have been doing some things correctly, but this is reported inflation. So who the hell really knows? They could be probably doing a better job of fudging the numbers. In fact, the Swiss government, they came out to rescue one of their large local utilities called Axpo Holding AG. That's a $4 billion Swiss franc line of credit to cover margin calls because they believe Axpo is a systemically important electricity company. Who would have thought electricity companies are very important? I guess we believe them now just as we're approaching winter. Not sure if you saw this story from Bloomberg, but they're indicating that China's largest energy firms are sending liquefied natural gas to the EU nations. So we could break this down. So Russia's selling LNG to China for rubles and yuan. China in turns takes that, sells that same LNG to Europe, presumably at a profit,
and
whatever currency they want to take because Europe is fucking desperate. And people wonder why we Bitcoin. And hopefully they're not paying in the fucking euro because that currency has been smoked in the past year. It's been down 10, 15, 20% value against the US dollar. And this is taking out the real value of the currency. If you look at the price against homes, oil, or even fucking baseball cards, it got absolutely wrecked. But they're trying to fix the problem, right? Nah, I don't think so. Because they're actually talking about raising rates, and they did so. 75 basis points is what they did. It's the highest on record from what I understand, but they're still acting 6 months late compared to the Federal Reserve and the Bank of Canada. And while on this topic, the ECB, their president, Christine Lagarde, said the ECB can help lenders act as a clearing member for energy firms. So originally, the ECB was intended to be the buyer of last resort for banks, but now they have extended their reach to assist those energy firms that require liquidity issues. Incredible stuff. The ECB should now stand for Everybody Can Borrow. That's the new acronym for ECB. So with these new measures,
when's the shirt come out?
Let's do it. Let's print it. So with these new measures in place, are things going to improve in countries like Germany, for instance? Fuck no. In fact, their chancellor came out and said that the energy crisis will remain for years. Imagine that. And all the while, Their nuclear plants are sitting there mothballed, collecting dust. And the EU looks like they're going to be doing some sort of fucking price control for energy prices during peak hours. They're saying they're using the words, quote, flatten the curve, unquote. Fuck, just 2 weeks of this, guys. I promise you, after 2 weeks, it's all going to get better. And it's going to just trust us. We got you guys covered. Who's going to pay for this fucking price control? Well, borrowed money, and they could deal with this in the future, the proverbial kicking the can down the road. We've seen this before. We'll see it again. And more money from the sky. The Germany's economic minister promises to help businesses this winter. He says that they're going to open up wide rescue umbrella, and we will open it widely so that small and medium enterprises can come under it. Fuck, that's going to be a lot of helicopter money just coming down. Not to be left behind, the UK government, they're also freezing gas and electricity bills for the average household at £2,500 for the next 2 years. Who the fuck's going to pay for this? Well, you know what? Who fucking cares? It's all going to be done with borrowed money. We'll deal with it in the future, right? Did you see this beauty coming out of the Eurozone, Joey? A global minimum effective taxation in 2023. Have you heard about this one?
This has been floating around for a while, but yeah, let's talk about it.
So, I mean, we had Janet Yellen talking about this a little while back. Well, it's looking like France, Germany, Italy, Spain, and the Netherlands. Now they're united and ready to implement this global minimum effective taxation in 2023 and by any possible legal means. And they're fully committed to complete their work on, get this, on better reallocation of taxing rights from huge global multinational profits with the objective of signing a multilateral convention by mid-2023. Essentially, they fucked up their economy. Now they want to do the same to the rest of the world, so everybody's in the same boat. I like that thinking. But even though with all this insane stuff, there's still a silver lining in this. Check this out. This is a 180 turn. The UK, they've done a fucking 180 here. They've undone the fracking ban, and this is a way to boost gas supplies in the UK. Too little, too late? We'll see. And I'm just going to end it on this. Vladimir Putin, he's based. He was talking on TV about the US dollar, the euro, the British pound, which he said are compromised currencies, unfit for transactions. They also fail when using it for holding deposit and storing assets. When we have to have a dictator from the East tell us what's wrong with our currencies. And this guy, he's no angel. He's done a lot of bad things to get where he is right now, but also in the past little while, starting a war with Ukraine. Many people have died, innocent people have died as a result. But still, he's right in this. I'm not going to say that he's a good person. He's just definitely not. But he's fucking right. And when we have somebody like Vladimir Putin telling us what's wrong with our currencies, and he's correctly identifying the issues, we got some fucking problems. We're not getting the correct information from our people over here.
My brother, I'm with you. Great job, as always, leading off with just a heavy, heavy dose of doom and gloom. Did you see Doomberg's recent, oh, you didn't see Doomberg's recent article because you don't subscribe, but like I subscribed to that newsletter. I shouldn't even call it that. That like, you know, that Substack, and he's got a great line there that he's actually spit out a couple of times on podcasts and in spaces that, you know, this sort of G7 price cap is a demonstration of how world leaders in the G7 are just completely detached from reality. And he lays it out pretty bare. Like, there's no way that Joe Biden should be able to tell India what to pay for Russia's oil on an open market. These people have like absolutely no influence on what goes on in India, which, by the way, is like one of the largest or largest growing economies in the world now. It's just completely insane. So I am completely with you on this price cap thing. I think this is insanity, and a lot of people are dismissing this out of hand, rightfully so. I got some other information here. I saw in the chat a couple of people, Candace and a few others, talking about the inflation number coming out tomorrow, right? CPI print is tomorrow. We like to look at the Fed nowcast, the Cleveland Fed nowcast. You know what they're projecting for tomorrow right now?
It's 7.8 to 8.5?
8.24. So 8.24% is their projection. They're always off. I think they were a little over the last time, last month. I don't remember exactly what their prediction was before. I didn't look, but if it's around 8 or a high 7 handle, that's still like incredibly high. I just think that you're seeing the effects of months of rate hikes and probably this SPR thing too, as far as energy costs. And energy, as we talked about many times, is an input into every other tertiary good, every service, every product, you name it. Energy's in there somewhere, petroleum's in there somewhere. So the SPR release really does contribute to those prices dropping, or at least downward pressure on those prices. That will eventually win out over a sustained period of time. Now, the problem, obviously, is that the SPR can only sustain that pressure for so long. But by its very nature. So let's see how that plays out. Okay. You talked about changing definitions of a soft landing. Our friend Ethan Liu, who's been on the show before, had an article today talking about changing definitions in the Canadian economy and Canadian, you know, sort of Canadian rules about air travel, where now the Canadian government is qualifying any flight that takes off or lands within an hour of its scheduled time as on time. Do you know what the threshold used to be for an on-time flight in Canada?
10 minutes.
15 minutes. So they're changing these things, not just in economics, but, you know, a little lighthearted change there as well. Interesting stuff you mentioned as well, Len, about the sort of, you know, Swiss rat on your neighbor thing, among other sort of shaming campaigns we've seen in America and Europe and Canada, that people who are eating too much meat or, you know, have their heat on too high, their AC on too high. Gavin Newsom sort of did this cringe like public service announcement the other day talking about how everyone's got to turn their AC down after 4 o'clock or something like that. Like there's like a shaming mechanism that I think works with people, resonates with people when the outcome is, you know, if I think back to when COVID first started, you know, let's stay apart from each other for 2 weeks and see how this goes. That was the first exposure any of us had to this. I think most people in the modern world wanted to do that and participate in it earnestly for 2 weeks, maybe a month, maybe 2 months. I don't know. But I think that the reason they were earnestly doing that is because there was clearly no other option. And I would also argue that most people felt, I know I felt this way, there's no preparation available to governments at the time to really get ahead of this thing in a way that would be successful, let's say. With shutting your air conditioner off, you know, it's a bit of a different story. I think you may find that the name, shame, and blame campaign is not quite as effective when Governor Newsom pretty clearly is running the Rams Bills season opener with a full fucking stadium, all the lights on in LA. Like, this is really not that hard to figure out. We talked about this in jest before. The carbon and other energy reduction they want to see is your carbon and your energy and your energy. It is not theirs. It is not the energy that makes them money, et cetera, et cetera. I had this discussion with a friend of mine who doesn't watch the show, I don't think, the other day about how Bitcoin miners, you know, if you want to win votes over, you could tell Bitcoin miners to shut off or underclock or whatever and be a lot more successful with your electorate than you can running name, shame, and blame campaigns when peak power demand comes online and you need people to shut off their AC in a heat wave. I think some of the temperatures I saw for California during that time, what were they, 104, 105 some of those days? Did you see that?
No, it could be a dry heat too. It's a little bit different.
I mean, it doesn't matter. It's still super, super hot to ask people to have their AC on at 78, I think I saw, 79 in some places. Like, it's too much, okay? Let's get away from that and come back to Canada for a sec, because we're going to talk about, obviously, Pierre in a little bit and what that means. And I think you're going to start seeing some narrative shifting. So we may as well talk about some of the things that are going to contribute to that narrative shift in Canada. CIBC, Len, put out an article. Their chief economist put out an article talking about how the provincial and federal governments, our federal government and provincial governments in Canada, are throwing gas on an inflationary fire, because in a period in... there's like a period now where inflation is really coming home to roost for a lot of people. We've talked about this before, that it's not just, you know, my gas is a little more expensive or my hydro is a little more expensive. It's everything is a lot more expensive now. And governments feel like they have to do something. So I'll quote him here. What concerns us is that the federal and provincial governments of Canada are feeling tempted to, quote unquote, do something to help their constituents cope with high prices. While governments are feeling some inflation in their own costs, they've done even better on the revenue side, which creates the impression they have the green light to put more money in voters' pockets. Incredible stuff there, right? He's talking about how government tax receipts have gone up a little bit, but he goes on to say the purchasing power has really not. And he finishes this little diatribe here, which is on Zero Hedge, if you want to read it. It's a free read. That every government handout, subsidy, cap, etc., is inflationary by design, whether it's instantly or quickly inflationary, or whether it's inflationary over the course of 6 months or a year, whatever. You can talk to your friends about that over a couple of pints, but the fact of the matter is you're going to have that problem at some point. And we also in Canada have to start thinking about this trigger mortgage rates thing. We talked about this a bit last week, and I did a little digging on this because I wanted to be clear before I explained it this week. With interest rates going up as much as they have, and about 50% of Canadians on variable rate mortgages, you may find that your mortgage or your friend's mortgage or, you know, people in your lives' mortgages, even if they're on variable rates, the monthly cost hasn't gone up. So how does that work? We've seen such a huge rate increase, but no one's monthly payment's going up. Well, here's how it works. There's two baskets into which your monthly payment goes. There's the interest basket and the principal basket. The principal basket gets you equity on your home. You own more of your home after paying that cost, that total. The interest basket obviously is throwing good money after bad, to say the least. Now, if the rates go up, what the bank does first is they move from the principal basket into the interest basket. So let's say you're paying 10% interest, 90% principal, which no one is, but for the sake of argument, okay, just to illustrate the point. After a rate hike, you may find that you're paying, 95% interest and 5% principal, or worst case scenario, 100% interest, 0% principal. The problem is pretty soon, a lot of these variable rate mortgages, the rate's going to be so high that the interest is going to become higher than the total payment was in the past. And people are going to wake up to two realities, right? And both of them are going to sting, probably one more than the other. The first is that suddenly the interest rates going up are negatively affecting you. The worst of the two, though, I think, judging by the other surveys we've seen here about general financial literacy in the country, certainly among people who own homes, unfortunately, I think what was that number? It was like 50% of people don't know what a variable rate mortgage change means for their monthly balance sheet. What was that survey a few weeks ago or a few months ago?
Like that. Incredible that people are unaware what the fuck's going to happen.
Complete insanity, but they're going to find out the hard way. So the item number two is that after they find out that the cost of their mortgage is going up because of the rates, they're then going to find out that for the last 6 months or 8 months, while the rates were going up, they thought they weren't paying any more in mortgage payments every month, which is true. But they also weren't paying down their principal for 8 months, which they didn't probably know before that trigger point, right? So they're going to find out both those things at the same time. I think that's really going to sting. And it's going to be a political issue, I suspect, in the next election, which I'm sure we'll talk about, obviously, with Polyev winning the conservative leadership race on the weekend. Let's talk a bit about what's going on in the States. So Len, I don't know if you know this, but Janet Yellen has actually been an environmentalist for a long, long time. I've been doing some digging. Sources here at the CBP and our research team, our crack research team, have pulled this photo of a young Janet Yellen working to save the environment. Do you know where I got this picture from, Len?
It looks like from a Marvel comic.
Sir, she's a planeteer.
Ah.
So there's really no surprise that Janet has been doing that, though it seems here she's got a little more color in her hair than she does at the moment. So Janet is part of a problem in the United States with, I want to say, like, gusto and ego, both of which are probably true, but there's more to it than that, right? If you want to really see what these guys are about, you can go to Javier Blas's Twitter account, and he's got a good tweet there from, I think, today or yesterday, I forget, but it's a chart you've probably seen before. If it's of U.S. inflation forecasts, and if you read the news these days, everyone at the Fed level, government level, is still talking all the time about how inflation is eventually going to get back down to 2%. It's only a matter of time. 2%, 2 years ago, it was, okay, we're going to get there by 2022. Last year, okay, we're going to get there by 2023. This year, okay, we're going to get there by 2024. Now, the problem is all these things, in a way that probably wasn't true 15 years ago, all these things are kept on record and shared as, like, very simple, charts, graphs, et cetera, that are easy to pull up and look at and compare to as far as your record. So I'm going to share my show notes here for a sec. Like, when you look at this, okay, does this strike you as something that, like, you think is a solid predictive tool? No matter where you look on this chart at any point in time, if inflation is under 2%, they think it's going to get to 2%. If it's above 2%, they think it's coming right back down. And it doesn't matter how high that line goes, their lines just get steeper. They just constantly think it's coming right back down to 2%, no matter how far afoot they are from reality. They just don't care. It doesn't matter what the story is. It doesn't matter if there's a pandemic. Nothing matters to these people. They are doing narrative control. They are not doing economic forecasting. This chart is demonstrative of a failing institution that is the Federal Reserve. There's no doubt. There's no doubt. Look at this. Like, are you serious with this? This is embarrassing. You'd be thrown out of any post-secondary institution worth its weight in copper for putting a chart like that together and submitting it as part of a report or a research paper or anything like that. It's completely insane. So you got this problem now with the inflation forecast. And we talked about Fed now and how much of a joke that is too. So we got now as well As far as like whether the economy is healthy, as some of these guys would have you believe, Janet specifically, people are paying more for they're paying more for derivative premium as far as protecting themselves from stock market crashes on Wall Street than they've ever paid before, ever before. The premiums are so high on these protective vehicles that the prices of these things, you know, even at all-time highs, it just doesn't matter because the demand just keeps going up. Bloomberg and a few other places have talked about this, and the New York Fed's got a little bit about this too. Now, as far as other predictions, Len, as if the Federal Reserve can get any more off the beaten path as far as what they should be doing, did you see that the New York Fed has a predictive paper on climate change that says if we don't get to net zero by 20, even if we get to net zero by 2050, it's still not going to be enough.
I don't know why the Fed is getting involved with that.
Who fucking knows? Who fucking knows, man? These guys are all over the goddamn place. Other interesting stats I have, like the household net worth in America decreased by a total of about $6.1 trillion between April and June, 4.1%, the most on record per quarter. I think you might have mentioned that too or something akin to that. So like you got all these things. And I just think, you know, as much as I don't want to lead with this like doom and gloom every week, and it's funny, we got a little bit of shit from Boomer, who's a friend of ours, about how maybe we'll have some good news tonight, and we will. It just never stops, man. And so when you tell people like why you're a Bitcoiner, why you buy Bitcoin, I look at this and I think even if every narrative around Bitcoin, it's a hedge against debasement, it's an inflation hedge, it's a good store of value, it's uncensorable, even if all those things completely failed, putting your money in fiat and fiat adjacent vehicles, the stock market, even housing, it seems like at this point is a little more shaky than it was, you know, a year or 2 years ago. You're relying on the competency of these people and the competency of these institutions. And Len, it's just not there. Like, am I crazy saying that? The institutional memory of these things is so short that they're lacking all the things that really took them to where they are now as far as their monolithic status. They're lacking the foresight, lacking the forecasting, lacking all these different things, lacking the competent people. The education system that they're hiring from is subpar now. And I think that even if you don't want to have all your net worth in Bitcoin, certainly you and I don't, but having none and relying entirely on this sort of system, these kinds of people, I wouldn't do it. I'd be buying Bitcoin, man. Fucking for sure. After the opening we just had, I'd be buying it if I didn't have any.
They're Keynesians. That's what they are. And they believe what they believe in their,
they don't believe it. I honestly don't think they believe it. That's another frustrating piece of this. Like, I just don't think they believe the things that they want us to think they believe. I just don't. They don't act this way. Right. They don't invest with that thesis in mind. It doesn't seem like to me. And I don't, that's another thing that drives me nuts. They don't buy it. They want you to buy it, but they don't buy it themselves. It shows.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, if you look at Yellen, her formal education, everything is following the Keynesian model. So it's for her to turn her back on that would be an admission of everything she's learned to be incorrect. So I'm not sure she would. I'm not saying she's a stupid person. She might even be a very charming individual for all I know. Like if you left your lights on in your car, she might knock on your door and say, "Excuse me, sir, your lights are on." Like I have
she'd probably call the police and ask why the police will come. Why your lights on? You can't use that energy. Is that a gas car? Is that ice lights?
So, but arrest this man. If we're talking like we could just really talk about her ability as a Treasury Secretary, even, you know, as the chair of the Fed. Yeah, she's better off just doing speeches. She does a really good job at earning money doing that, and she does less negative. She hurt far less things doing that. And you talked about that 2% goal, and that they're trying to achieve. You displayed that chart, man. I mean, that's incredible. They're always trying to achieve that 2% goal, regardless of where they are or what they're doing. The 2% goal is the shining light again of the Keynesian model. This is what we have to try to achieve. And, you know, if you were to present that in school, Joey, and you get thrown out, you could always use the excuse you identify yourself as a central banker. And if they still kick you out, you have to be able to let back.
Absolutely blazing hot take. I look at that chart, Len, and like how wrong can you be? And it's not just like, you know, we're inflationistas over here at the CBP and I want inflation to be super high and I want them to be wrong all the time. They're not just wrong on you know, in periods of high inflation, they're wrong in periods of low inflation as well. They're wrong under 2%, and they're wrong above 2%. They're wrong above 6%. They're wrong above 8%. They're wrong above 9%. They're constantly fucking wrong. And so, like, I just don't understand why anyone takes these guys seriously. This is my biggest beef at the moment, that people who are, and this is why I think they don't believe, you know, they don't believe in the product they're selling, to put it kindly. These guys, Len, are too smart to know, too smart to not know that this thing is falling apart and bursting at the seams all over the modern world. It ain't just in America. You know, it's Europe, it's Canada, it's everywhere. Every guest we've had, whether it was the Bitcoin Bears or Ritesh recently, Jeff Booth, you name it, guys who are heavy into Bitcoin, guys who are tangentially into Bitcoin, guys who, you know, have a finger and a toe in Bitcoin, guys who hate Bitcoin, guys who want Bitcoin to fail, think it should be illegal, think it's detrimental for society. Everyone agrees that this experiment's almost over. And so there's no way that you and me can be here in the basement kicking it, talking about Bitcoin and the economy, and these guys who are in it every day just don't know. I don't buy it. And that's, to me, the most frustrating thing.
Well, they're always on point with what they're, you know, this could be what they're saying to try to appease us, but they've lost any sort of faith there, because you can only say it so long before people say you're bullshit, or you're just full of bullshit. But even to go back with Gavin Newsom, you were talking about that they're trying to raise or keep the AC 78, 79 Fahrenheit. I'm not sure if you saw that speech. My wife was the one that clued me in on this, but apparently he was wearing a sweater in that speech too. So he was, similarly to what Macron was doing in France, and he was saying that the abundance is now done, the time of abundance is done, and he's standing or sitting in front of gold-plated doors and all that shit. Newsom's doing the same thing. Why is he wearing a sweater? And what you were mentioning, it's a very
hot
climate.
Is it cool where he is, you think? I don't know.
Unless it's being done in, you know, the Bay of San Francisco, where it's notoriously cold, I doubt it. Yeah, there's something fishy there. And, you know, again, it's do as I say, not as I do. But that's it for that side. We could transition to the Canadian news now. I'm calling a quick audible here, Joey. I'm sorry to say. I'm just going to say one thing before we go on to the next thing. There's going to be an Ottawa Bitcoin meetup. It's going to be for a basic tutorial meetup that's taking place on Wednesday, 7 p.m. Scores Pizza in the Glebe or Glebe. Apologies if I pronounced that incorrectly. So Ottawa this Wednesday, Bitcoin meetup, 7 p.m. Scores Pizza at the Glebe or Glebe. So check it out if you're in the general vicinity. But moving on, I just wanted to talk about Pierre Poilievre. And yesterday he won the leadership race for the Conservative Party of Canada. And so he's taking that helm right now. So he's looking like it's going to be, if there's ever, well, there's going to be an election. So whenever an election is to take place, it looks like it's going to be between Trudeau versus Poilievre, because historically in Canada, you only had two parties that ever governed. So I don't see anybody else governing aside from the Conservative Party or the Liberal Party of Canada. And what's interesting about this, with Poilievre coming out and winning, Trudeau came out with a speech today, which was very interesting, because he's talking about things he hasn't talked about until today, talking about reining in inflation, higher costs. They're going to try to do whatever they can to stem that. But also he was talking about Bitcoin and other, or and cryptocurrency. So it's interesting to see that talk now is entered
Trudeau
into
talked about that?
Mm-hmm.
What he's talking about.
He was saying that he shouldn't be speculating against the, I'm paraphrasing here, you shouldn't be speculating against something like the Canadian dollar. And if you did, you would have been wiped out, essentially. And he's partially right, depending on when you got in, but he's wrong if you got in at a different time. So it's really dependent on when you look at it. It's interesting that narrative now has gotten into the political spectrum in Canada. So that's my take on it, Joy. I want to hear what you got to think about that.
I think that the narrative is really starting to, the narrative, you know, threading machine is starting to spin up. I read a good article today on Bomb Thrower, which is a kind of, you know, off the beaten path, admittedly, blog that deals with Canadian politics, among other things. But good article today. Okay, so first of all, Len, big kudos to you, because last week I was surprised when you started talking about a snap election being called in the fall. And that seems to have become the popular opinion this week, that there is, in fact, going to be a snap election called in the fall, maybe for early in the new year. But in the fall of this year, we will hear that there is an election coming up, which is crazy. Interesting stuff that I want to share, and I'll share my screen here again. So if you're listening, my sincerest apologies, but this stuff will be on the video feed for you if you want. And also, of course, you can just go to bombthrower.com and see some of this stuff. So this is interesting, this map here. For people who think that the support for Polyev was concentrated in one area, let's say, or that this guy can't get out the conservative vote, or that he's running on a sort of fringe platform, the guy won to the tune of 68%, and he dominated basically fucking everywhere. There's like three or four regions where he didn't win outright, and even those regions is very light Jean Charest support. So I think that this guy really is going to be a force in a national election. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think people are really discounting that, especially on the left. CBC, I don't know if you watched any of their coverage, Len, but like it was a complete gong show over there. Let me just scroll up to this map I was just talking about. So if you look at the map here, pretty heavy win almost all over the country, which is nuts. I don't know. You have a little bit more political chops than me. What do you think about that?
I think it's par for the course. I Ontario is where he's running. He's based out of Carleton, I think, is his riding. And conservatives, they tend to do very well west of Ontario. So that, excluding BC, I guess it's kind of a three-way tie generally over there. So, this is not really that crazy. Quebec, the Conservative Party, they tend to get wiped off the map over there. But one thing to note is that typically when there's new party, when there's new leader of a party, there's a bump that usually takes place. So there's going to be a little bit of a spike in the polls. People like that for whatever reason. But it kind of dies off momentarily. It's kind of the honeymoon phase that just doesn't last that long. So I mean, if you're going back to the topic of when there's going to be an election, I don't think there's going to be an election very soon. And there's a number of different reasons. Number one, because I mentioned there's a little bit of a bump for getting the new leader. But also, I don't think the Conservative Party would like to have an election now. I think he wants to put his thumbprint on his party. And he's going to take some time to do so. He's going to have to appoint a shadow cabinet. He's going to have to bring his own people there. So there's a little bit of backroom stuff that's going to have to be done. And something's got to be triggered. Generally in the House of Commons, they're not sitting right now. So that's just, that you'll see what's going to happen. Once they sit in the House of Commons, you get an idea if they're going to want to have an election or not. You kind of get the general feel of things going forward.
Okay, that's good. That's good information. You've been spot on so far. I just want to point to this, Len. This bit here about whether or not Trudeau will hold his own election. So the Liberals are headed for a similar fate. He's talking about the last time the Conservatives elected a new leader near the beginning of the Harper years in 2004, I think. Earlier this year, Trudeau and the millionaire Marxist, great name, Jagmeet Singh, merged their parties into a liberal socialist coalition in a deal that would keep them in power until 2025. If the alliance hangs together that long, it will remain to be seen whether Trudeau actually sticks around for the election. It's more likely he bows out, leaving one of his underlings holding the bag, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think that's likely or no?
Yeah. If things are looking really, really bad, you could pull a Mulroney and disappear. But if there's an inkling of him winning, he's going to run. And I can't see anything engineered behind scenes that they'll stab him in the back, because he got them to this point. They won, what, three, four elections? I forget what
three,
it is.
Three. They just won their third,
One majority, two minority. So, that in itself, that has some weight to it. And they were third party when they first got elected as a majority. So that was a massive win for them. So I can't see anyone backstabbing him at this point. But if things go really, really poorly, he's not going to be out there and say, I'm going to lose. It's guaranteed I'm going to lose. I'm going to just be the sacrificial lamb, lose, and then go on to sunset. No way. These people all have big egos. They don't want to lose bad. So if there's the possibility, a very strong possibility, he's going to lose. He's going to disappear and leave it for the next person. And it seems like it's going to be Freeland. She seems to be the next heir apparent.
Wow. Okay.
Doesn't it? Or am I wrong?
I don't know. I think you might be right. I hadn't thought that far ahead who the heir apparent for the L's would be. But yeah, I think that's a good candidate. It's definitely a favorite. That's for sure.
Yeah. And she's been around for a little while, so she understands the job. She's been doing some negotiating with the states when they did the new NAFTA deal. So she does understand the relationship between Canada, United States, and Mexico. So there's some, it makes sense that she'd be there. But then again, I could be wrong with my thinking there. But I still think Trudeau's going to stick around. As long as there's a decent chance he could win, I can't see him leaving. If there's zero chance, he'll just say that's enough, leave, and he'll leave as a winner, never having lost an election, similar to like Mulroney did. And I don't know who else might have done it. Trudeau, Pirelli's senior. He did lose some elections, but the last time he when he said, you know, he was going to lose and he left, but then came back and he won. I mean, I don't know. Different times too, but I think a lot of it is still, it could be replicated today.
It's interesting. I think, you know, you and I have done our best to stay away from politics on this show, though it may not seem like it all the time because just the interwoven nature of that game with economics. But I think it may be time to bring on a political personality, not necessarily a politician, but rather maybe an analyst of some kind or something like that to talk about some of these things. Because you and me have some insight and I think some reasonably good sources, you know, guests we have on the show might tell us stuff afterwards, et cetera. But I think bringing on analysts might be a good idea. So if you have an idea, listener, viewer, and you want us to talk to somebody to break this stuff down, I don't know, whatever. Who?
Rosemary Barton. We'll get her on.
Somehow I doubt Rosie's coming on, but you know, we'll talk to almost anybody. I'd be happy to bring somebody on in that regard, and a nonpartisan, of course. And let's see what we can talk about. Absolutely. Anyway, it's good, man. I'm glad we talked about that because I think that that's an important subject and it's going to become a lot more important in the next 6 months. So look out for more of that on CBP for sure.
We're guaranteed an election within the next 3 years. So
2025 is the latest it can go. Yeah.
Yeah. It's September or October. I forget when it was. So 3 years. Yeah. No, September. September is going to be it. So yeah. Anyways, moving on. The Bank of Canada. Well, we've talked about them at length on this show. This past week, they raised the interest rates by another 75 basis points, and it's the fifth time they've done it this year, five times. And their interest rates now stand at 3.25. They're going to be increasing it again twice, it looks like, and they'll probably be sitting around 3.75, 4%, I don't know, somewhere around there when all said and done by the end of this year. So that's very interesting. To be perfectly honest, I didn't think they would have done it to this point, and I suspect they're probably going to raise rates another two times. I can't see them turning about and saying no at this particular moment. So the beginning of the year, we were very, very low interest rates. What was it? 0.25, 0.5%. We've gone up quite a bit in a very short
period. We're third or fourth in modern economies for current rate, I think, right? Third, fourth, or fifth, something like that. Pretty high on the list anyway.
I looking at Poland, for instance, they've raised their rates 11 times this year. 11. And 25, they're now sitting at 6.275. So there are some that are just, it seems like every couple of weeks they're raising rates to figure what the heck, let's do it again. So yeah, I mean, that's all I got to say. It's going to get more expensive to service your debt. Borrowing is going to be more costly to do so. The price of homes, they have to come down, right? I mean, they can't stay up forever. And I think we're starting to experience that now.
Trigger rate, man. I'm telling you, people with the variable rate mortgage, they don't know what they're in for, but they're going to find out very shortly. And like I said, it's going to sting in more ways than one. And I think that's going to be a pretty important political football should things remain this way into the new year. I don't know. I honestly, Len, like, I don't want to bring this back to politics, but if this inflationary pressure and housing market declines, and like Ritesh said, you know, causes real wealth evaporating the way that he described, you don't think we could have an election before, you know, in Q1 23, an election call?
It's possible. I mean, I'd love to talk about this more in depth. So I could see that. And the longer they wait, the more pain we're going to be suffering. And generally, when there's pain that people are suffering because of a poor economy, they tend to punish whoever's in power. So I suspect things are not going to get better in 2 or 3 years. So it's advantageous for the governing party to trigger an election sooner rather than later, because things are still, no matter how bad they are, it's going to get far, far worse. And they don't want to be in a position that they're going to be, people are pointing fingers at them as they're the ones that were the culprit for creating all this mess here. So I could see an election very soon. I even said potentially even this year, but that window is closing really fast. I don't see them doing a winter election. We went through one back in December 2005, January 2006, and they're very difficult to run because a lot of parts of Canada, they're just frozen. So it's just difficult to run those campaigns. And I don't think anybody has the stomach to go through something like that again. Mm. So I don't know. I mean, I could be wrong. If there's no election called within the next month and a half, it's done for 2022. And who knows? Maybe the beginning of 2023, there'll be something. I think it's quite possible within the next 6 months or give or take, there'll be something called, given because things are going to get really, really bad soon.
In between petitioning to come on the show, Boomer has suggested someone named Rupa
I've heard that.
Subramanya. I have not, but I'm going to have to check out her work and see if she's a prognosticator we can bring on. I trust his judgment. I think that the chat's like booming tonight as always, but I think that the chat generally, if there's some consensus on a guest, it seems like Rupa may be it. So okay. Shit. I'll send her a message, I guess, once I finish
here.
Anyway, yeah, let's do it. Cause I do want to get someone who I think can give us a balanced look at the short to medium term political picture in Canada. Poilievre, Trudeau, you name it, the important issues, demographic changes, things of that nature. I want to talk about all that stuff. So let's work on it. Anyway, yeah, go ahead, man. What's the next story?
So another political hot potato is the economy and the jobs. And in fact, in August, we shed some jobs, about 39,700 to be specific, were lost in the month of August. And we were expecting a gain of 15,000. So that's a huge difference. And the majority of these losses were felt by young adults. And I'm not too surprised about that. But here's something that's interesting. In fact, seniors came out pretty good when you're looking at the numbers in terms of gains. A lot of seniors are actually, in terms of the number of seniors, they grew in terms of them working this past August. So for whatever reason, we know the reason, they need to work. So people are going to be looking at this as a source of pride for the labor market is strong. And it shows that seniors, you know, they're coming out, but really it's not. It's showing that the economy is weak. And if they have to come out and start working, and there's more seniors working now than they were in July and any other month, that's pretty sad. And it goes to show you that their savings and pension and everything that goes along with maintaining their lifestyle in their golden years have been wiped off, and they're doing whatever they can to keep their heads above water. The majority of the job loss were reported to those between the age of 20 to 24, and this represented a loss of 31,200 jobs. So of the losses, 39,700, 31,200 were from 20 to 24 in terms of that age bracket. That's incredibly large. And that group, they have an unemployment rate that jumped up one whole percentage point to 8.6%. It's much, much higher than before. And the unemployment nationally stands at 5.4%. It's up from 4.9 in July. That's a political hot potato. And if things don't improve there, it could be really problematic for whoever's governing this country at that point in time.
How many jobs, like, and this is not meant to be disparaging, but if you haven't worked in, let's say, 10 years, right? Let's say you retired when you were 60 and you had to get a job again when you were 70. There's probably not been a more difficult 10-year period to be out of the workforce. What kind of jobs can you really get short of extremely skilled labor that requires, you know, STEM or some specialized financial education? Presumably those people don't need to find jobs now into their golden years because they've managed their money well and they have, you know, significant investment portfolios, pensions, et cetera. If you're one of these people who needs one of these jobs into your sort of twilight, what kind of job can you get after 10 years out of the workforce? Only the lowest, worst, you know, probably most degrading, most high friction as far as relationships with the public, Walmart greeters, cleaners, things of that nature. Now, there's no knock on those jobs, of course, but these jobs are not meant for seniors. They're meant for young people trying to break into the workforce. They're meant for people who are trying to advance their careers, not retire, not work part-time and try and keep their lights on to their 70s and 80s. This is a sign of a failing economy. Our friend Massa often talks about, you know, the end of the empire. This is a great sign. This is a great flag post, I think. Seniors are meant to be highly regarded. They're meant to be, you know. I don't think we're living in the Stone Age anymore, of course, or the Bronze Age. But seniors are meant to be, you know, beacons of knowledge and culture, and you know, they're meant to be part of society that's sort of treasured and revered. Not meant to be slapping happy face stickers on people at Walmart. It's fucking disgusting that this is required. Well, and it really shows that we're going the wrong direction. I don't think anyone would argue against that, unless, of course, you are the Walmart CEO or something of that nature, and you can get this cheap labor. But I think this makes me sick. It's absolutely terrible.
The Walmart greeter is that. I mean, it's predominantly elderly individuals. You know what? Another one is Home Depot. I find a lot of elderly people working there, and it seems like they'd like that type of job.
Tradespeople want to be in that environment. I think there are some retired tradespeople. I know an ex-girlfriend of mine, I'll say her uncle. I'm probably getting too close to home here, but her uncle works at Home Depot, and I don't know if he has to or not, but certainly a guy like that would enjoy working there, I think. You know, into his 60s or 70s, if you could work there 10 or 15 hours a week, right? You're around the trade, you get to help people. That's rewarding work. But Len, like, that's not Walmart greeter.
No, No,
like,
but
that's not sweeping the floor. That's not.
No, you know. You're right. And but another thing to consider, even if they did get into a higher paying job, and I'm maybe speaking out of turn here because I don't know all the statistics, but I'm thinking that it may impact, if you make money, a lot of money, it may impact your old age security and also your CPP payments. I'm not sure if those are, they deduct or they adjust that depending on how much you earn. But if they do, then, I mean, I don't know. But these are things I just don't know because I'm far away from getting paid in those, any of those two things. So I'll let you know about 30 years.
I don't know. This is another thing I'm surprised. Again, like there's something to be said here, obviously, for like the average voter and their competence as far as digesting a statistic like this or like knowing where to find it before it becomes a political issue. But how many more people in their 70s, 60s, 70s have to come out of retirement to work a shitty job before it's a political issue, right? It seems like it should be. Elderly people vote in extremely high numbers. It's a dense voting block and they're living longer and their entitlements are, you know, not anywhere near what they should be or what they need to be, I guess I should say. You got to figure that's an issue that's going to come up in an election, no? On elections here, but fuck, like it's important, I think.
And Candace corrected me. Yeah, CPP is not impacted by how much you're earning, but old age security is.
So there we go. Okay.
All right, we can move on to the next and the last Canadian story I have is inflation may still be on the rise, but the Bank of Canada notes that the CPI in July, which was lower than in June, was mainly result of cheaper gas price. And you know, we talked about this at length before, but core inflation is still on the rise. So that's something that you want to look at. And it's noted that the mortgage credit continues to grow at a rapid pace. And again, we talked about this recently. And it's now approximately the total debt of the mortgage within Canada is about the size of the GDP of Canada, which is it's a difficult number to just fathom how large it really is. And if it really is a bubble that's going to burst, again, we're going to be holding a bag, very expensive bags. All of us are, because it's not going to be, they're not going to let it just go fall into banks. It's going to somehow fall onto us, CMHC, and you name it. So, yeah, and inflation is still rising, but the real estate, it's looking like it's more and more unsustainable as we move forward. And this is according to the Bank of Canada, so I'm not just pulling shit out of thin air here.
No, and I think the Bank of Canada, you know, Tiff Macklem is quick to dismiss Bitcoin out of hand, as are Pierre Poilievre's naysayers in the press and in the political and professional spheres as well. But it's policies like this and stats like this and an environment like this that pushes people into Bitcoin, right? We talked with Mike Green. I can't remember if it was after the show or not, but I think all three of us agreed that whether or not Bitcoin existed or not, the fact that young-ish people, I'm not that young, like 35 is not that young, but the fact that young-ish people are saying fuck it and putting a bunch of money into this, you know, compared to other assets, like by and large, unproven-ish asset class, especially 5-6 years ago when we started buying, right? Like there's not even close to the infrastructure that there is now. It was very much a moonshot back then. A little more stability, certainty now, I think. But the fact of the matter is that all three of us agreed, you know, despite our differing views on Bitcoin, that the worst thing that could happen is people have that feeling that they need to opt out and take moonshots and really see what's going on. And when you talk about these sorts of things, how does the bank expect people to behave? They no longer view hard work and you know, the Canadian dream, quote unquote, as Ritesh was calling it, as a viable option. I am not surprised to see this. And I think that we got to really start paying attention to these numbers, because eventually we will have significant brain drain, excuse me, in this country, to other places that are a little more friendly to that younger generation, the people who want to own homes, people who want to do all that stuff. It's not going to be here, man. And it's not going to last forever. It's not a sustainable path that we're on, unfortunately.
So that's it for the Canadian news. We can transition to the rest of the news. I don't have too many topics to discuss, but let's lead things off with a very interesting story. It looks like the White House says the U.S. Congress may consider legislation to ban proof of work mining. And so they're talking about reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and they gave a number of different ways to do so. And should these measures, and I'm quoting here, should these measures prove ineffective at reducing impacts, the administration should explore executive actions, and Congress might consider legislation to limit or eliminate the use of high energy intensity consensus mechanism for crypto asset mining, end quote. So what this, it really doesn't say a lot. I mean, it's kind of vague in how it's written here, but it looks like there may be the very beginning of a battle between energy usage that Bitcoin mining uses right now, and the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions that they want to try to impose on everybody. So this is going to be interesting development, how this plays out. Is this going to ultimately like ban Bitcoin mining in the United States? Who the hell knows? Are they just going to basically say we can't have any new ones going forward, similar to what New York has done with their proof of work ban? I don't know. And there's going to be some real kickback or some real problems coming back from states that do have Bitcoin mining in their states, and they're providing a good service in a regard, such as like in Texas, when there's power issues, they're able to move the power from the Bitcoin miners to the rest of the grid to help deal with excessive demand. So this is something that's going to play out in the next little while, but it's something we should all keep an eye on.
It's funny that the only high energy consensus mechanism they talk about is Bitcoin. As Ethereum obviously tries to move to proof of stake, which I guess is supposed to happen. That's tomorrow, right? The 13th.
They didn't say it specifically Bitcoin. They call it crypto asset mining.
Wow. Well, you know what they mean, right? Like I think there's not really a coincidence. They quote a bunch that Alex DeVries, that guy who's like, you know, a known sort of fraudster, shyster, as far as Bitcoin energy consumption, famously uses the bogus metric cost per transaction or kilowatt hours per transaction or whatever that metric is. It's garbage. I don't think it's a coincidence. This is coming at the same time that ETH is going to transition to proof of stake. I think the attacks on Bitcoin are going to intensify. Now, here's the question for you. The only more expensive consensus mechanism than Bitcoin as far as energy use is the US dollar, the euro, the yen, the yuan, the Swiss franc, probably, who knows. But like these things are sort of insanely expensive. And I would argue becoming more expensive as they become less viable, right? Where Bitcoin becomes more expensive as it becomes more viable, this sort of inverse relationship that I've been thinking a little bit about, but unfortunately don't have the energy or commodity chops to really flesh out in like an essay or something. But I look at the two and I think as Bitcoin spends more money and energy on securing the network, it means the network is becoming more successful, right? It's a sign that the network is becoming more entrenched, that more people are adopting it and view it this way. Whereas the opposite is true for all these other currencies as they spend more energy and you know, shed more blood, specifically in some of the cases I mentioned earlier, they're becoming less viable and showing more cracks in the armor, et cetera, et cetera. I think this is a pretty clear distinction that really needs to be fleshed out by someone with more competence on the you know, adjacent subjects than I have. But we got to start thinking about these things because I think that these attacks are going to ramp up. There's no way that Governor Newsom is not going to mention Bitcoin before his tenure in California is over. If he's got to keep doing rolling blackouts and having people turn their AC down, et cetera. I think Bitcoin's an easy scapegoat. It has been for a long time, but it's very much in the public eye now and in the crosshairs of most of these politicians.
It's low-hanging fruit. And you're never going to get an accurate number for how much energy is used for the US dollar or the euro. And you named a whole bunch of different currencies because it's just so large and there's a lot of adjacent parts that's just hard to measure. And ultimately, it's very, very difficult to say how much impact the militaries have in keeping these currencies relevant.
All of it. It's all military might. Like you can say whatever you want about the faith and backing of the US government, but like it's really just bombs and bullets, right? Like at the end of the day, what is it? It's nothing else, whether it's domestic or foreign. Bombs and bullets is what keeps that train rolling.
There's really, you never get an accurate number then, because think about all the buildings that are set up for banks and vaults and everything that's associated with it, insurance and shit like that, that just needs for these businesses to keep moving, and they're staffed with people moving to and from their home, jets flying to and from because there's meetings everywhere on all corners of the globe. And there's so much energy being used in that industry. It's difficult to capture it. And it's so
easy. Don't even call it an industry. Like Marty says, this is the unproductive class. They're not in industry. They're a parasite. And you know, I don't use that term lightly. I think about people like Al Gore and John Kerry, and they're fraudsters, man. They're fraudsters capitalizing on this renewables grift that I think is starting to come apart. Like I mentioned on Ben's show a couple weeks back, but it can't happen fast enough, honestly.
Yeah. And it's so easy to figure out, for the most part, how much energy is being used by Bitcoin, because you just look at the hash rate and you can deduct from there how much energy is being used. But anyways, that's a topic that's pretty much done. Let's move on to the next one. MicroStrategy, they're raising up to $500 million to buy was suspected to be buy more Bitcoin. Now, I took a look at this press release. I took a look at the note from MicroStrategy. It makes no mention of Bitcoin, but why would they raise $500 million? I presume it's going to be for Bitcoin, but I suspect some of it is going to be used for other things as well. Which now, if they are going to use the majority, if not all of it for Bitcoin, $500 million, that's a heck of a lot of money. How long can they do this before the SEC says, no, you're not going to be listed anymore, because they are becoming a company that is so tied to Bitcoin and less to do with what they are originally supposed to do. So it's almost duping investors, the SEC could say. And it's also turning into a pseudo Bitcoin ETF, which the SEC has been denying up until this point for a spot Bitcoin ETF. So I'm wondering how much more they could do this, push this envelope before the SEC says, fuck you, you can't do this anymore. Is to date, they've been negative with anything to do with Bitcoin with ETF. And yeah, it just seems like MicroStrategy is becoming more and more like one Bitcoin ETF as we go along. $500 million purchase. And I don't know what to say. It's pretty fucked up.
We'll see if they do it or not. I don't think the SEC can do much about it without having a true mask off, we're afraid of Bitcoin moment. I think for the same reason, you won't see a broad ban of Bitcoin anytime soon until it becomes the only viable option for a first world government like the States or Canada, which may not be that far off. Who knows? But as far as like duping investors, they can do whatever they want with the funds they raise. Whether, you know, investors don't get a say in CapEx, for example. They don't get a say in operating budgets. They don't get a say in salaries or executive comp. I mean, they do, I guess, get some say in executive comp vis-a-vis voting rights. But like, generally speaking, investors don't get much. And when you buy a stock, you're really buying a derivative on someone else's management style, you know, whether it's Mike Saylor or Fong, the new CEO, or whoever, you know, is on that board that you like. It's not up to you as an investor. The fact of the matter is that if you have a better idea, you should start your own damn company and buy whatever you want with your share dilution at 500 mil, you know, to the tune of 500 million. But until you have a life-size, damn near life-size model of a sailboat and the Bitcoin thing floating behind you for podcasts, like, chances are you don't have that 500 mil available to you. So you're SOL, dog. Sorry. I don't think is there really a case we made for duping investors? No fucking way. If the Twitter bot thing is not duping investors, then there's no way what Mike Saylor's doing is duping investors.
I think it's a little bit a Twitter bot thing. I mean, it's one thing that's trying to pump up your own thing, but it's another thing by using the capital from a company.
He can dilute whatever he wants with it. If there's no earmark, like again, like I'm not saying Wayside House has this huge budget, but there are funds we get through certain initiatives, be it provincial or stuff that we do autonomously outside of the province or the Fed, that we have to earmark because our governance documents, you know, and our documents related to that capital raise, for example, say we have to do stuff like that. And so there's a price to pay for us, both in terms of reputation and in terms of probably law, like violating a law that, you know, stop us from doing that kind of thing. You mentioned one other thing that I forgot to talk about, the ETF, the pseudo ETF. The SEC is only not allowing that Bitcoin ETF because they don't want anything to settle in Bitcoin. Settling gold, settling in oil, they don't care. But settling in Bitcoin, they absolutely do. And so that's the reason why. We've talked about that before. I think a lot of people view this as a pseudo ETF already. And so I can't imagine somehow more people are going to view it like that. You know, like who's buying MicroStrategy for like the software at this point? Is anyone? Yeah. You know? I am. Our friend Nancy Dancer has some experience with the MicroStrategy software suite through her line of work in food services, but she's the only person I know who has that experience and speaks highly of MicroStrategy as a software company. Everyone else, you know, in the chat here, we see it a few times, and you can see it underneath his tweets too. Sailor, the Chad, Giga Chad, blah, 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 you know, Sailor's tweeting out any given Sunday and then putting Bitcoin, hashtag Bitcoin after it gets a million retweets. Like if you don't know by now, you're never going to know.
Now, just to remember, they are at the mercy of the SEC, and they're the ones that allow them to be listed too. So ultimately, it's going to be up to the SEC to decide if how they want to deal with this. And who knows? I'm just throwing shit against the wall to see what sticks. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's some wrist slapping that's going to be coming along because of this. But anyways, let's go to the last story I have. El Salvador. Well, it's been just past a year since they adopted Bitcoin as a currency over there. I'm not sure how well this is going in some people's eyes or how poorly this is going in other people's eyes. But it's, you know, we just passed the year mark and this seems to be going on for better or for worse. They also, just today, Bukele tweeted out, he said that they have officially launched the purchase offer for all external debt due from 2023 to 2025. All holders of bonds of the Republic of El Salvador can access this public and voluntary repurchase. And we talked about this in the past, that they were going to be doing it. So it looks like they are executing on that. So it's just interesting to see how the finances work with El Salvador, especially as they're very much tied to Bitcoin moving forward. And they don't have their own currency. Their official currency is the US dollar. So very interesting stuff here.
Yeah, I'm, you know, I remain neutral on El Salvador, as you know, as has been reported on this program many times. Our friend Jaime Garcia, who is Salvadorian and has some ties to that region still, speaks very highly of programs like these. And I'm curious to see what happens, Len. Like, I think that first tranche of debt comes due, like we've talked about, I think February 23 or sometime in Q1 23. Bukele says he's got the cash to pay for it. A lot of naysayers say he does not and has bigger fish to fry. Let's see. I really, like, I don't know anything about this, you know, anything more than you do. I know you're just reporting the news, and maybe this is one I'll just leave alone as far as a take.
Perfect. Then that's it for the news stories.
Which is great, actually, because I do want to get a McFlurry. And also, you know what I forgot? This is the first weekend of NFL football, and there's a Monday nighter on that probably starts in 15 minutes. And I totally forgot about it, because I think this time last year, we were doing the show at 6 still, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, we didn't adjust to the 7 o'clock
start. That's right. That's right. Okay. Because I was thinking about that today. I'm like, wait a minute. How am I going to watch that game? Okay. Anyway, go ahead. What do you got? Bitcoiner of the week, right?
That's the segment that's coming up, but I don't have a Bitcoiner or no coiner of the week. I was going to be yelling, but I don't know. I can't throw her name on this list again. I just, nothing I have for that.
Her name has been mentioned so many times. I got a Bitcoiner of the week. It's a guy I've talked about before. Arthur Hayes. Wrote a piece.
The segment is sponsored. Go ahead.
Oh, by Tahini's. Yeah. Len, you're the big Tahini's guy. Tell me about Tahini's. What do they got going on?
Well, they are going to their 16th store, I think. They're opening one up in Toronto. Another one is going to be open in Toronto not too distant future. So if you are in Southern Ontario, and you are within driving distance of Southern Ontario, you're not too far away from one Tahini's restaurant. So check them out. Ali is a fantastic Bitcoiner. He purchased some more Bitcoin not too long ago on the dip. So obviously he understands and he's balls deep in this. And the food that they offer over at Tahini's restaurants is fantastic. So check it out. I totally recommend going there for lunch, dinner, and everything in between.
You've been there for breakfast? Like, are you going to say breakfast? Do they have breakfast there? Lunch, dinner, everything? There's nothing in between lunch and dinner. It's just snacks. Are you suggesting breakfast over at Tahini's? That might be awfully spicy for the first meal of the day. You don't think?
There is no breakfast over there. I think they open around 11 or 12 most places, I'm guessing. So there's going to be no breakfast menu. You're not going to get the, like, what do you get for a breakfast place?
I don't know. I have no idea what you get for breakfast at Tahini's. They got a bowl or something you can get? I don't know.
Breakfast anyway. Bowl. That'd be awesome.
Always a bowl market at Tahini's. So listen, Arthur Hayes wrote a piece on his Medium blog that I think is worth everyone's time, as always. He was on Bankless last week, which is a show I subscribe to for you, listener and viewer, to get the latest on our enemies over there on the Ethereum side of things. He writes his piece, and he's talking a lot about things that I think matter to us as Bitcoiners. But specifically, he's talking about when it's going to be too late to buy Bitcoin and how you're going to know. And he goes through some examples of this guy, Mr. Abramovich, who I think is a soccer team owner who had his assets frozen, even though he presumably hadn't done too much wrong, just some associations with some of these Russian oligarchs at the beginning of the war. Here's a quote from the story, though, anyway, about buying Bitcoin. Before I jump in, a quick PSA. The time to buy Bitcoin is now while you still can, because once your fiat assets are frozen or fiat capital controls are erected, your wealth cannot be converted into a harder currency. At that point, you're at the whim of the state, and you better hope the flag printed on your passport wins. That is how the state gains the support of the masses. It takes away their modes of escape. The only way out is through. And there's some other stuff in here about capital controls and some, you know, interesting commentary about the number of times where there's been a clear up-and-comer rival power to the current hegemon, and you know how that's resulted in war. I think he said 70% of the times it's resulted in a kinetic war, which is kind of a scary number. But this is interesting, I think, because people, at least in my life, when you tell them about Bitcoin and you know, you got to buy it now, everyone gets to the price they deserve. There's memes, you know, some of which are a little more, you know, a little more full of friction than others, let's say, when dealing with normies. I think I think Hayes makes a good point. I think we've talked about it before too, and I think we're starting to see it now in Canada specifically. Capital controls are a real thing, and they're a real thing in a number of different ways, right? We could look at the easy stuff, I think, Len, stuff like the limits on buying some alts in Canada, the limits on what it means to be an accredited investor to get rid of some of those limits, what it means to sign up for an account to buy Bitcoin, what it means to have a bank account if you're a Bitcoin business. These are all versions of capital control. How much money can you get from Bitcoin and into Bitcoin, right? Those are important. But the other capital control thing that no one talks about, at least not in this respect, is inflation. You're losing the ability to become sovereign every single day. There's more people who can't afford a house. There's more people who can't afford a car. There's more people who have to rent and borrow and use and return and all these different things. Material things really matter. Your living situation, your transportation, all that stuff. But among these things, I think is the opportunity you're losing through inflation as far as being able to buy Bitcoin or any harder currency. Governments are taking away purchasing power every day. And you know, one thing that's adjacent to that is your ability to buy this sort of sovereign asset, self-custody, no counterparty risk, et cetera, et cetera. And Len, I think we're getting to the point now, honestly, that it might not be a mistake. You know, I think there's a lot of governments who are looking at the way that this is limiting people's ability to buy Bitcoin, not only through inflation, because, you know, obviously you can get less Bitcoin, but because you have to spend more money on things that really are important to you to sustain. Like I mentioned, your living situation, your kids, your family. You're worried about where your meal is going to come from next in a way that you weren't maybe 5 years ago. And so I recommend everyone read that Arthur Hayes piece. I'm not going to do it justice. I've tried to do this before on Why Are We Bullish, and I had a little more time than I have now to do so. And I think I still left people wanting a little bit. So go to his blog, read it. I recommend reading Arthur Hayes, man, anytime I can. I don't always agree with him, but I think he's a really bright guy. He's got a lot of insight, and he is my Bitcoiner of the week.
That's a good choice. And inflation definitely is a problem that everybody's dealing with, and it's much more prevalent now than it was, say, a few years ago. And it's impacting people's lives. You can just see it, man. Everything is so much more expensive. Fucking cars, houses. And as I said earlier, fucking even baseball cards are more expensive. It's fucking nuts. In fact, there was a Mickey Mantle rookie card that was just sold for a record price not too long
million
ago.
Million two, right? Or something like that?
Something like that for a fucking card, man. Like that's, I mean, it's a hard asset. I mean, it's unique and it's, but yeah, it's there you go. That's a wrap, folks. So that's it for this episode. We'll go transition to the after show. And before we sign off, the price of Bitcoin.
Abbreviated after show. Price of Bitcoin in American dollars right now, right this second. I got my commodities thing on from the oil price earlier. $22,250. Not bad, man. We're good with that. That little 22K mark there, we like that. We like that area right now.
It's a stable coin. It's been here since June. 3 months we've been in this vicinity. So in Canadian dollars, I have 28,000. 986. So we went down. I don't know what happened this show. Not too pleased. Anyways, it is what it is. Thank you for joining us. And yeah, we'll transition to the after show. Hopefully you stick around for that.
I'm going
to
say goodbye. Goodbye, everyone. And then you're going to wrap it up the same way you always do. Goodbye, everyone.
Take care.